Thank you for standing by. This is the conference operator. Welcome to the Sangoma Investor Conference Call. As a reminder, all participants are in listen-only mode, and the conference is being recorded. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity for analysts to ask questions. To join the question queue, you may press star, then one on your telephone keypad. Should you need assistance during the conference call, you may reach an operator by pressing star and zero. I would now like to turn the conference over to Samantha Reburn, Chief Legal Officer. Please go ahead, Ms. Reburn.
Thank you, Operator. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sangoma's fourth quarter of fiscal year 2025 investor call. We are recording the call, and we will make it available on our website for anyone who's unable to join us live. I'm here today with Charles Salameh, Sangoma's Chief Executive Officer, Jeremy Wubs, Chief Operating and Marketing Officer, and Larry Stock, Chief Financial Officer. Charles will provide a high-level overview of the quarter. Jeremy and Larry will take you through the operating results for the fourth quarter of fiscal year 2025, which ended on June 30th, 2025. Following their presentation, we will open the floor for Q&A with analysts. We will discuss the press release that was distributed earlier today, together with the company's financial statements and MD&A, which are available on SEDAR+, EDGAR, and our website. As a reminder, Sangoma reports under International Financial Reporting Standards, IFRS, and during the call, we may refer to terms such as adjusted EBITDA and free cash flow, which are non-IFRS measures but defined in our MD&A. Before we start, I'd like to remind you that the statements made during the course of this call that are not purely historical are forward-looking statements regarding the company or management's intentions, estimates, plans, expectations, and strategies for the future. Because such statements deal with future events, they are subject to various risks and uncertainties, and actual results may differ materially from those projected in the forward-looking statements. Important factors that could cause actual results to differ materially from those in the forward-looking statements are discussed in the accompanying MD&A, consolidated financial statements, our annual information form, and the company's annual audited financial statements posted on SEDAR+, EDGAR, and our website. With that, I'll hand the call over to Charles.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. As we close out fiscal 2025, I'm proud to report that Sangoma has delivered another quarter of strong performance, strategic execution, and accelerating momentum. We exceeded consensus expectations in Q4 with revenues of $59.4 million, adjusted EBITDA of $11.4 million, and margins of 19%. These results reflect the strength of our model, the discipline of our execution, and the growing impact of our transformation. Over the past 24 months, we have modernized our systems, streamlined operations, and sharpened our go-to-market strategy. That work is now complete, and the results are showing up across the business. With a solid foundation in place, we are relentlessly focused on growth, investing in innovation, including AI, channel expansion, and deepening our partnerships to scale faster and capture share. Sequential growth this quarter was driven by prem-based product sales, which performed well on the back of targeted campaigns and strategic share gains. We're seeing clear signs that our integrated communication offering are resonating with our customers, and that Sangoma is finally winning in the market. Our prime example of our sharpened focus is the sale of our VoIP or VoIP supply business, completed at the end of June. We executed this divestiture with speed and discipline, marking a deliberate shift towards software-led recurring revenue services, which now represent more than 90% of our revenue mix, up from 79% 24 months ago when I joined this company. It also frees up resources for our high-impact growth initiatives, with proceeds reinvesting to support our mid-market enterprise go-to-market strategy. Beginning in Q1, we will also evolve how we talk about and report our business. Going forward, we will categorize our results into two areas, core services and adjacent services. Now, core represents our SaaS-led communication platform and is the growth engine, whereas adjacent are non-core but cash-generative businesses. This view clarifies where we're investing for growth and where we're harvesting cash flows and provides investors with greater transparency into where we see the strongest potential and how our mix is evolving. Jeremy's going to expand on this a little more shortly. As we enter fiscal 2026, our priorities are clear: deliver organic growth by investing in our people, products, and partners, pursue inorganic opportunities where they create strategic value, and generate strong cash flow to support these strategies and create value for our shareholders. We are increasing our investment into marketing and channel partner development to drive growth across our UCaaS, our CCaaS, our CPaaS, and our infrastructure platforms. These investments are already yielding results, and we intend to broaden our presence in key verticals such as healthcare, education, and distributed enterprise, positioning the company to capitalize on structural shifts in the market. And we're not doing this alone. As you may have seen by some of our recent press announcements, we've built strong strategic partnerships to deliver enterprise-grade solutions tailored to very specific industry needs. In hospitality, for example, we partnered with VTech Hospitality to integrate their industry-leading phones with our UC platform, creating a fully unified guest experience solution for our hotels and for resorts. In education, we teamed up with QuickLerts to help schools comply with ELISA's law and enhance campus safety, an urgent and growing opportunity across the U.S. Our prem-based solution is gaining solid traction here with a 16% rise in pipeline demand from this sector alone. Equally important is our partnership with Amazon Web Services, which I'm very excited about, which we announced this summer. This is not a one-way relationship. On one side, we leverage AWS technologies to deliver scalable, secure, high-performance communication infrastructure for our UCaaS and contact center platform globally. On the other, we're aligning closely with AWS's vast ecosystem to tap into their global scale and co-sell opportunities, driving stronger demand generation for our combined solutions. Together, we are better positioned to serve this mid-large market for the enterprise customer that we've been talking about for some time, who require mission-critical, cloud-based essential communication services. These partnerships reflect our commitment to building purpose-built solutions for very specific priority industries. Now, looking ahead, we are encouraged by the momentum and the opportunities we see across the core business. Although some of the larger enterprise opportunities we pursued in FY25 have longer sales cycles and implementation cycles, we expect sequential growth to begin in Q2 and to continue through the remainder of fiscal 2026 and beyond. This has been a transition phase for Sangoma, with fiscal Q1 marking the inflection point. As it concludes in the coming weeks, we expect growth to resume as the pipeline builds to create bookings which flow into implementation and then on to revenue, with contract terms lasting 3 to 5 years on average. The direction is clear. Our strategy is working, demand is building, and we are confident in the durability of these high-margin opportunities. In closing, I want to thank the entire Sangoma team for their outstanding work this year. Together, we have shaped a more focused company, one that is ready to scale and backed by strong, flexible balance sheets that gives us multiple pathways for growth. I also want to thank our investors for your continued support and confidence in our vision. We are energized by the opportunities ahead and confident in the significant value we will unlock. With that, I'll hand it over to Jeremy and Larry.
Thanks, Charles. I want to echo Charles' remarks and thank the Sangoma team for their tremendous work and accomplishments this fiscal year, and our investors for the continued support. While the pace of growth is ramping more gradually, I am confident and excited by the opportunities we are capturing. I'm going to focus on two topics this afternoon, both of which Charles referred to in his opening remarks. First, more detail on how we're going to categorize the business going forward, and second, more on our go-to-market progress and key indicators. In Q2, I explained that we restructured how each of the product lines fits within our ecosystem and how we consolidated 11 product lines down to a simplified structure. I also talked about some areas not fitting in with our strategy. We have acted on that with the recent sale of VoIP Supply. Now, as we further push to focus the business with the objective of capitalizing and prioritizing on areas of growth and high margin potential, it's natural to categorize the business between core and adjacent, with core being high-margin SaaS and related proprietary communications products covering UCaaS, CCaaS, CPaaS, premise PBX solutions, and our bundle strategy supported by our MSP capabilities. Put another way, core represents the products and services that materially contribute to our essential communications strategy for SMB and mid-market, and with adjacent being the communications technology supporting specific needs such as trunking, analog to digital and media gateways, and open source solutions. So adjacent covers more established technologies that have a higher propensity to be sold standalone or as part of a third party's communication solution. Core will be our growth engine and today represents roughly 75% of Sangoma's revenue, while adjacent accounts for about 25%. Shifting to the go-to-market, our offerings are resonating with customers and we are winning in the market. we have and continue to see improvements in our forward-looking pipeline across the core categories I mentioned earlier, including UCaaS, managed services, and our Prem UC product business, where we are capturing share from Avaya and Mitel. This drove a 3% sequential increase in our backlog at the end of Q4, reflecting healthy demand and providing visibility into future revenues. So why, as Charles mentioned, have our go-to-market efforts taken longer to impact revenue, with their contributions expected to be more visible as we move through FY26? During our transformation, we've reprioritized our cloud product roadmaps, advancing features like Microsoft integration, unified mobile apps, and others to support acquiring larger logos and moving up market, as we were prioritizing and completing software development, which took longer than expected, we focused our go-to-market on our Prem UC share take program and large managed services opportunities. These larger managed services opportunities have a 6 to 8 month sales cycle and similar implementation cycles. This high mix of managed services deals in our pipeline means the MRR revenue is recognized in later quarters. Today, as we exit Q4 and enter Q1, that pipeline mix is becoming more balanced. Now we also have a growing number of shorter cycle deals of 60 to 90 days with implementation cycles of 30 to 60 days that will help as we progress through the fiscal year. Adding multiple layers of pipeline, long cycle high value opportunities, and shorter cycle wins is providing better visibility into the growth that we expect to begin in Q2. This stronger, more balanced pipeline includes some of the largest MRR opportunities since Charles and I joined Sangoma, including some exceeding 100K. And in our Prem UC products, which contribute more quickly to the P&L, our channel has delivered 3 consecutive quarters of sequential revenue growth, including 18% growth in Q4 over Q3. We are opening new routes to market, including partnerships with service providers, hyperscalers, and vertical solution providers. Charles highlighted a few of the recent examples like AWS, VTech, and QuickLert. I've also talked in prior quarters about the untapped opportunity to provide solutions to service providers, something we put focus on as part of our wholesale offerings in late FY2025. Since then, we started working on an opportunity with a CLEC approximately 4 months ago to provide a complete bundle to replace their soft switch and provide hardware and services to install and activate new users. That opportunity is now in late stages of the sales process and will ramp to over 20K MRR in the next 9 months, with the potential to double by FY2027. Equally important is how we focus on monetizing existing channels and deepen relationships with current clients. For example, one of the top opportunities in our pipeline that we've been seeding for 8+ months is an upsell with a distributed enterprise customer we've supported for years, expanding to a broader managed service and UCaaS bundle. Our value proposition of essential communications with enterprise-like capabilities at an affordable price lends itself well to many of our clients, and in this case supports an upsell of an incremental 16K MRR. These are just a few examples of how our go-to-market is taking hold across new logos, account expansion, and strategic opportunities. With the right focus and the right programs in place, we are adding layers to our pipeline that give us the visibility and confidence that demand will translate into revenue growth. Thank you, and over to you, Larry.
Thanks, Jeremy, and welcome, everyone. We appreciate you joining us for today's call. In Q4, Sangoma built on the momentum from earlier in the year, delivering solid financial performance and disciplined execution, providing the financial flexibility to invest with discipline to drive long-term growth. In the fourth quarter, we generated $7.1 million in net cash from operating activities, including $3 million of accelerated vendor prepayments relating to our ERP implementation. Excluding this one-time impact, net operating cash flow would have been $10.1 million, representing a healthy 89% conversion from adjusted EBITDA. For fiscal 25, net cash from operating activities reached $41.8 million, representing a 102% conversion rate from adjusted EBITDA. Working capital management was again a positive contributor as we added $1.9 million for the year, driven by strong collections and improved inventory management. This builds on the 3.9 generated in fiscal 24. Free cash flow for the fourth quarter was $4.8 million, or 14 cents per diluted share. For the full fiscal year, free cash flow reached $32.9 million, or 98 cents per diluted share, consistent with the $1 per diluted share in fiscal 24, underscoring the value we are unlocking at Sangoma. This strong cash generation enabled us to retire an additional $5.2 million in debt during the fourth quarter, bringing total debt reduction for the year to $29.9 million. We ended Q4 at $47.9 million of total debt, well below our original target of $55 to $60 million. We also executed on our NCIB as another way to return capital to shareholders. To date, more than 500,000 shares have been repurchased for cancellation, representing 1.5% of shares outstanding, and reinforcing our confidence in Sangoma's long-term value. The consistency of our cash generation and strong balance sheet is enabling us to lean into growth while still expanding profitability. We are prioritizing organic investments to advance our products and platforms, enhance the customer experience, and scale our go-to-market capacity. At the same time, we are preserving flexibility to execute on our inorganic pipeline, reduce debt, and return capital to shareholders. Now turning to the P&L. Revenue for the fourth quarter was $59.4 million, representing an increase of $1.3 million, or 2% sequentially from the third quarter, driven primarily by the strength in our prem-based product sales. Core platform revenue was stable sequentially, reflecting consistency in the base business. Gross profit was $40 million in the fourth quarter, representing 67% of revenue, compared to 69% in the third quarter, reflecting a higher mix of product sales. Adjusted EBITDA for the fourth quarter was $11.4 million, or 19% of revenue, and included $500,000 in expense related to our ERP implementation. Excluding these costs, adjusted EBITDA would have been $11.9 million, or 20% of revenue. This is up from 17% in the third quarter and represents the highest margin we've delivered over the past 8 quarters. These results demonstrate the consistency of our performance and the resilience of our business model. Now on to guidance. On June 30th, we completed the sale of Void Supply, our lower margin resale business, for $4.5 million in cash. This was a deliberate step to streamline our portfolio and sharpen our focus on recurring high margin growth while realizing a solid outcome at roughly 4x trailing 12-month adjusted EBITDA. With this divestiture behind us, our fiscal 26 guidance reflects a stronger business mix and a sharper focus on our higher margin core platform products and services. For fiscal 26, we are expecting total revenue in the range of $200 to $210 million. This compares to $209 million in revenue in fiscal 25, excluding the contribution from Void Supply. As Charles and Jeremy mentioned earlier, demand in our core categories is building, supported by progress in our mid-market enterprise initiatives. We expect sequential growth to begin in Q2 and continue through the year, with Q1 marking the low point and the bridge to stronger growth ahead. Beginning in Q1, we expect gross margins to improve to approximately 75%, with operating expenses stable at approximately $30 million per quarter, excluding the amortization of intangibles. Finally, we are guiding to an adjusted EBITDA margin in fiscal 26 in the range of 17% to 19%, up from 17% margin in fiscal 25. EBITDA margins will follow our normal seasonal pattern, starting lower in the first half and expanding in the back half, driven by higher sales and ERP-related cost efficiencies. This outlook reflects improved gross margin following the sale of Void Supply, while also funding incremental investments in channel and partner initiatives. Importantly, we expect strong cash generation to continue, giving us flexibility to lean into the growth initiatives and return value to shareholders. As we enter fiscal 26, we do so with a stronger business mix, a healthy balance sheet, and growing momentum in our core markets. We are confident these fundamentals, combined with disciplined execution, position Sangoma to deliver sustainable growth and long-term value. To repeat what Charles and Jeremy said earlier, we extend our sincere thanks to the talented team at Sangoma, whose dedication and daily contributions continue to drive our success. That concludes our prepared remarks. Operator, let's open the call up for some Q&A.
Okay. We will now begin the analyst question and answer session. To join the question queue, you may press star 1 on your telephone keypad. You will hear a tone acknowledging your request. If you're using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing any keys. To withdraw your question, please press star, then two. The first question comes from Gavin Fairweather with Cormark. Please go ahead.
Oh, hey, thanks for taking my questions. Maybe just start on the incremental go-to-market investments. I'm curious how much of this is about going deeper with existing partners and channels versus kind of adding new partners and distribution channels. And then maybe just secondly, I mean, do you feel like you have, you know, some really good data in your pipeline that suggests to you that these incremental investments will make a nice return?
Hey, Gavin, Charles. I'll take a shot at the beginning of this. So the investments are being put into kind of three areas, and I would kind of categorize an overarching theme of coverage. Our platform is now being transformed and literally infinitely scalable. It's time now to start putting money into coverage, and that comes in two areas. One is field coverage, which will be adding more bodies to cover more of our states in the U.S. and potentially into Canada, as well as recruiting of new partners. And secondly, into marketing coverage, which is brand awareness, brand increases, marketing events, and industry events, things of that nature that are much more tied to our vertical strategy. So we also now have better unit economics that we really didn't have, say, 2 years ago, as we now better understand the dollar of input of investments into the market, both in field coverage and in brand awareness, and the translation of that to pipeline, as well as the lag from pipeline to bookings and then bookings into revenue. So we have a pretty clear line of sight. We're being a little cautious with the investments. We don't want to go crazy right off the top. We're incrementally adding investments, seeing the results, and then we'll continue to do so over the course of the year as the pipeline builds. And so far, the investments that we have made have begun to show improvements in not only pipeline size, but also the quality of some of the activities in the pipeline, given the money we've spent so far. So it's a progressive investment strategy throughout the course of this year and certainly going into 27 and 28.
Yeah, appreciate that. And Jeremy, you touched on you know, growth taking a little bit longer to accelerate than you anticipated, and you touched on R&D initiatives and sales cycles. You know, you didn't really mention the macro or competitive landscape. Curious if you've noted any change on those fronts as well.
Yeah, no, I would say, Gavin, like, you know, we haven't necessarily seen any, you know, major competitive pressures. I think, you know, as I mentioned, the sales cycles, you know, are a little longer, you know, and the implementation cycle is a little longer when you're attacking and going up market into some of these larger opportunities. So it's really that, right? Larger deals take a longer time to sell, longer time to implement. Like, we balanced that out a little bit, as you saw from, you know, some of the one-time product sales, which went up quarter over quarter, sort of three consecutive quarters. So it's just going to take a little bit of time for the kind of the MRR engine to light up. But, you know, Q2 and beyond, we'll start to see that lift quarter over quarter.
Great. And then just quickly on VoIP supply, was there a decent amount of Sangoma proprietary product moving to that channel, or was it mostly third party?
It was mostly third party. 90% plus would be third party, and I think there's a little less than 10% was actual Sangomas. And they're still a distributor for us. So, like, even though we sold them, they still sell our product as they do with all the other product lines that were carried in that particular portfolio.
Got it. And then maybe just lastly on M&A, I mean, you touched on it, Charles, in your opening remarks. I think you've been looking at various opportunities for a little while now, but with the balance sheet kind of, you know, where it is and being in a great shape, maybe you can just discuss your appetite for kind of firing up that growth lever and discuss how active your funnel is.
I'm starving. That's my appetite. I think we've been very cautious and very disciplined about our M&A strategy. We've actually embarked with another group to kind of help us fine tune a target. We've got a target list. But I've been really waiting for the ERP to get finished, which got finished in May or June. The company is now very much able to accept in the manner by which I want to bring acquisitions on, integrate them within a quick period of time, 120 days, extract the integration savings. With now the systems in place, the tools in place, the structure is in place, the transformation behind us, we've shifted completely towards growth and driving the two growth engines of organic, which you've heard Jeremy talk about, and now the inorganic has taken the top of priority for us. So very much on the books and very much down the road on looking at various targets in the areas we've described before at SD-WAN, security, zero trust networks, these kinds of areas that add value to enrich the portfolio and create the stickiness that we're looking for.
Yeah, I just add to Charles's comments. We have a very robust funnel of targets, and you know, part of our strategy to drive essential communications bundles right into the market means when you do an acquisition, you want to be able to, in a simple way, bundle in those capabilities. So the leading work that was required, like Charles talked about, the ERP, some of those integration components are really required for us to go and deliver a compelling bundle based on some of the things that we have in our target list.
I appreciate that. Thanks so much. I'll pass on.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kiana.
The next question comes from Mike Latimer with Northland Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Hey, Mike.
Hi. Hey, hi there. Congrats on the strong balance sheet improvement this year. That was awesome.
Thank you.
In terms of your view into the second quarter sequential growth, maybe give a little more color on visibility there. Is that tied to basically, you know, deploying bookings you've already had in hand, or is it, you know, dependent on a lot of, you know, kind of newer, smaller sales that close quickly, or like, what are you sort of counting on for that sequential growth?
Hey, Mike, it's Jeremy. It's a combination of both. I mean, we've got some business we've closed already or closing in quarter or closed in quarter in the pipeline, some of those larger deals, you know, which have longer sales cycles. They'll start to, you know, pull up and show in the second half, and then a pretty robust funnel of, you know, newer deals that have shorter sales cycle. I mentioned a little bit of that in my early remarks. You know, 2 quarters ago, you know, we started a pretty aggressive program to go after some of these larger logos. We've done that, but they have 6 to 8 month sales cycles, 6 to 8 month implementation cycles with some of the new features and capabilities we've focused on from a product roadmap perspective. In the last quarter, we've been able to target some more cloud-based deals that have shorter cycles. So it's a combination of both that'll help us, you know, drive the back half of the year and give us confidence in our forecast.
You heard us talk about the company now in these core versus non-core, or core versus plus adjacent. Those are the two categories by which we describe the company. Core being the high margin SaaS business at 85-90% margins, and then the adjacent businesses are really more the cash generative businesses that create stickiness with our customers. So both of these together are going to start moving based on stuff we did way back in January and certainly in Q3 and Q4, and that revenue starts to spill in the second quarter of this year, and then continue as it compounds going into Q3, Q4, and then beyond.
And for second quarter sequential growth, that's both. Are you thinking both total revenue as well as and services both sequentially up?
So total revenue, but in the categories of core and adjacent, Mike, is how we're looking at it forward, right? Mm-hmm. So that'll take into account the MRR, the NRR, et cetera.
Yeah, okay. And then on the adjacent category, you know, how much investment is going to go there? It sounds like you're counting on that to grow some here. You know, just how important is this adjacent category? And, you know, are there other products in here you might divest?
I would say the things that are in the adjacent category, I mean, they're going concern, you know, businesses, you know, they're reasonable markets. They don't have the same type of growth opportunity as the core does. So we're not putting a lot of investment per se in those areas, a little bit in kind of certain lines that are pretty targeted. So we do see some growth in some areas, but not to the same degree as really the core and, you know, where we think the big SaaS opportunities are that will really help drive margin and revenue over time.
But to answer your question specifically, no, we don't see any divestitures there at this point.
Okay. All right. Good. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Suthan Sukumar with Stifel. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Jeff. For my first question, I wanted to touch on the customer churn that you guys have seen as part of refocusing the business. You know, given that your gross retention rates remain pretty strong, is that churn largely contained now, or is there still some low hanging fruit that could fall off in the course ahead?
No, I think the churn is actually well under control. We're starting to see positive trends in that area. We're also deploying Now that we've got some of the systems in place, we're deploying more advanced AI-based tools that are going to help us even mitigate churn further. Our models right now are predicting that churn will actually continue to decline over the year, and certainly going into FY27. As we've gone through the stage of a lot of the legacy customers that were in the business, you know, over the last 2 years through the transformation, have kind of retired out. And our ability to upsell and cross-sell the new customers creates even more stickiness, which means less churn. And so we feel pretty comfortable about churn sort of being balanced and actually improving going into the next three quarters.
That's great. Next one, I want to touch on organic growth. You know, it sounds like visibility is improving, you know, given your commentary on sequential growth in Q2 and forward. You know, as you think about kind of the revenue growth and the bookings growth, rather, looking ahead, how do you expect the mix of expansion activity versus new business to trend compared to what we've seen in the past?
I think they're going to be driven pretty equally. We're actually investing in our field coverage that way, right? And I'll explain quickly as I can. On the expansion side, we've lit up several new programs. We call them Ignite programs, where we're going to our existing base. And now that we've got better tool sets to allow cross-sell and upsell, we're seeing service attach and expansion to our existing clients beginning to ramp pretty significantly, actually, especially in our business voice platforms. So some of the old star-to-star business that that we had. And an example of that was the bagel deal that we just described, the deal that we described on one of our customers who creates it's got a retail franchise operation who had a legacy access service with us, and we actually advanced a cross-sell solution to them. The other area is new logos, where we're going into new industry verticals. So we're partnering with new partners in hospitality and healthcare. We're expanding the RCM footprint, our regional channel manager footprint, investing in those areas, and they're creating a momentum on new activities, new customers who've never done business with us before, but they're coming in with larger deal sizes and bigger chunks from us at one time versus buying, you know, a single point solution. So it's a pretty dual strategy on both account expansion or share of wallet strategy, as well as new logo or market share strategies. And then we have a third one, which is large strategic deals, which has its own momentum in and of itself that are not even really predicted in our forecast at this point because they're so binary.
Okay, great. No, that's helpful. And then just wanted to double-click on the M&A commentary. You know, with respect to M&A, what priorities do you have here? You know, in terms of, you know, are these about market access or running out the tech platform, or is it really about looking at consolidating competitors or quasi-competitors here?
Yeah, a little bit of it is market access, different entry points into different channels, right? So, you know, some of the technology that was highlighted earlier, things like SASE, SD-WAN, security, we provide some of those solutions a little bit more in an MSP model. Our ability to integrate those kind of natively into our portfolio and leverage the partner ecosystem that would be part of, you know, an acquisition like that, you know, would open the door to not just selling more of those technologies, but also some of our UCaaS platforms, contact center platforms, and then vice versa. It gives us the opportunity to cross-sell those technologies into our existing partner ecosystem. So the strategy really is, you know, how do we make the go-to-market strategy that we have today with our essential communications bundles kind of more fulsome, and how do we not only provide value to the installed base through our cross-sell upsell programs, but open up really new channels, right, that give us an opportunity to cross-sell our existing technologies and solutions into those as well.
That's great. Thank you for taking my questions, guys. I'll pass the line.
Thanks. Thank you.
The next question comes from Robert Young with Canaccord Genuity. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening. Maybe just a couple of quick clarifications, if I could. The split, the 75-25 core versus adjacent, is that a Q4 metric, or is that what you expect in 2026 after VoIP supply?
Yeah, that's 2026 and forward. Yeah.
Okay. And then a couple of the comments on the return to growth. I just want to make sure I understand them. In the press release, it said second half return to growth in core platform, and then some of the comments were return to growth in Q2. I just wanted to parse that the right way. What are the pieces that are returning to growth, just to make sure I understand it?
So what we're seeing beginning in our Q2 is actually core and adjacent both growing from that point forward, Rob.
Okay. And then maybe the last question. The EBITDA margin guidance for 2026, so at 17% to 19%. I'm just trying, if you could help maybe bridge in simple terms. I know you talked about seasonality and expansion of some of the go-to-market. I think you said that one-time items would be 20% in the Q4, and it's stepping down in 2026 despite gross margin going up quite a bit. And I think in the comments you said $30 million OpEx X amortization, which is, it seems to be that similar to where it is today. Maybe if you could just help me understand the maybe if you could bridge between the 20% to the 17% to 19%. For me, that would be really helpful.
Yeah, sure. So OpEx throughout the year will be about stable at about $30 million a quarter. You got to take out from 25. Part of it is VoIP supply, right? That was included in our 25 results, right? From both an OpEx and an EBITDA perspective, the EBITDA was about 1.1 million in the year. Also, revenue is down about $4 million, and 75% is the other $3 million. So that bridges you down to that 17 to 19%, Rob.
Okay, that's helpful. then maybe last thing, I think you said you saw 18% growth in Q4 over Q3 from some of the channel efforts.
Our channel efforts around... Yeah, just specifically around our SwitchFox prem product line, a program in place 2 quarters ago to go after a lot of the premise PBX market, specifically Avaya, Mitel. We hired some folks from those organizations, and we've seen that's 3 quarters now of sequential growth in our SwitchFox prem lines and our phones, and that Q4 over Q3 had a 18% lift.
Okay, and so that's a direct result of some of these competitors and on-prem disengaging and channel coming to you.
We went to find them. We weren't shy about it, right? They didn't necessarily just ring us up and call them. We went to find them. We knew just given some of the distress in the market between those two organizations that we could go find opportunity. We had a compelling product, and so we went and grabbed some of the key leaders from those organizations and kind of went out hunting, convinced them of the value proposition of our products, being competitive and having the right compelling features, and signed up new partners, and we've seen pretty substantial, as I mentioned, 18%, Q4 or Q3 growth, and we see that, continue to be an opportunity for us going forward.
I'll add one thing, that Rob, you and I talked about this, that discontinuity that occurred in the market where some folks exited, the mainstream players exited the prem business, we were able to jump in very quickly. And there was this quick, really quick lift, and we see that continuing for the foreseeable future. But one of the things that is unclear completely is how big is this going to be, because these players have really moved out, and we're even a little bit surprised by how fast the reaction of the market was to our offering. The nice thing about our offering is a great transition from the prem markets at the client's pace to move to cloud, which we can capture them in our SwitchFox cloud solution. So this is a really interesting new area of growth for us. We've been at it for about 3 or 4 months since we really tackled it, and we've just seen this quick lift. And we're not really sure how big this is going to get over the course of the year, but certainly some opportunity that we're going to keep our eye on as we move through the year as a real growth engine for the company.
If I maybe push this a little bit there, would you give it an absolute dollar value for that business? Just to kind of, the 18% growth is really impressive. Is it just a small piece of revenue, or can you give a sense of scale?
We don't report enough on that particular number as part of our overall core services, but I'll tell you, it's a major chunk of the business on two fronts, right? One, it creates a larger base of customers by which then get transitioned over to cloud. As long as you can maintain service levels, which we have record service levels now, and customer sat of over 90%, These become long-term value customers who go from prem-based to eventually cloud-based. So it's a significant part of the portfolio. I don't want to give you the exact number, but you can assume it's a material piece of the three. Prem, hybrid, and cloud are the three big engines of growth for us. Prem plays a very important role in its current state, but then also in the future state as those customers move to cloud.
Okay, thanks for taking all the questions. Appreciate it. Thank you.
The next question comes from David Kwan with TD Cowen. Please go ahead.
Hey guys, it sounds like the gains you've been making on the on-prem side has been more driven by you grabbing market share because of those players exiting versus kind of a slowdown in that transition towards cloud-based solutions. Would that be a fair statement?
Yes, that'd be a fair statement.
Okay, that's great. And it relates to the M&A strategy. So it looks like you're looking for acquisitions in probably higher growing markets, which I suspect might carry higher valuation multiples amongst other things. So are you willing to make a dilutive acquisition here to help bolster your growth profile?
Are we willing to? Is that the question? Maybe to some degree. But to be honest, I think as the year progresses, also with the dynamics of what's going on in the industry with point solution providers, there are opportunities of other companies that are relatively close to our valuation that are in the market today, particularly in the security MSP space, the SD-WAN markets. These point solution providers are beginning to realize the market is looking for, especially the mid-market, is looking for single vendors that can provide a holistic set of solutions with a service wrapper on top. And going it alone, the valuations, I think, are coming down, and there's opportunities for companies like ours, especially given where we are with our leverageability in the company, to find targets, plenty of targets, that are not going to be very dilutive to the company. So if there's something really good out there and it's a smaller acquisition that's slightly dilutive, I don't think we'd have a problem with it. But nothing that would be too material from a dilution point of view.
Okay. And how big of an acquisition would you look at? I don't know if that view has changed over the last year or so.
The spectrum changes, right? I mean, it's really about the value of the acquisition and how it fits into the opportunity that we see in the market relative to our base and the clients and industries we're focusing on. But, and I've already expressed, we could go big with an acquisition if we wanted to, or we could pick up a client an account for something sub $1 million. It really depends on how we're going after adding value to particular parts of our portfolio that capture markets that we're maniacally focused on: healthcare, retail, education. And I think as the year goes on, that ideology might shift. But our target list right now spans a large spectrum of smaller type buttress type tuck-ins and larger type accounts that would be more materialistic to the company.
Oh, great. That's helpful. Just a couple more. Are you planning to provide historicals as it relates to kind of, it sounds like you're going to be changing how the revenue is going to be classified in your financials, and are you going to provide maybe other financial metrics like ARR?
We certainly will do both comparatives, David, and then look to add additional metrics beginning in Q1. Absolutely.
Great. Thanks, Larry. Last question. Just looking at the revenue by geography, obviously the vast majority of the revenue is coming out of the U.S. It's kind of been, the growth has been kind of low to mid-single digits on the negative side. But outside the U.S., there's been much larger declines. So wondering what's driving that difference there. Is it just weaker demand abroad, or are you maybe culling some of your international channel partners? Just wondering what's going on there.
I'll let Jeremy fill in some blanks here, but I'll just give you a high level view, right? Our focus has been North America, particularly the United States. As we prioritize where we put our energy through the transformational phase of the company in the first 2 years, our focus was to revive the brand and really begin to open up new channels in the United States. Our focus now, as we move into the transition and growth phase of the company, is to focus on international markets, mostly English-speaking, Canada and UK. In the UK, our business there has been predominantly built on the back of voice hardware technology, legacy technology that we own, proprietary technology. Our goal now is to expand the rest of our toolkit into those markets, into the UK, and expand our international footprint, but also into establishing new presence in areas like Canada, where we don't really have much of a presence, but we have lots of infrastructure already in place. So the international side of the business is kind of part of the plan for this year and certainly will be a major part as we go into FY27 and FY28.
Yeah, I just add to that, too, that, you know, the international portfolio is very heavily oriented towards hardware products. Right? So it doesn't have, today, as limited SaaS and software products that are the type of high margin we're pursuing as part of our core growth strategy. So we've been, you know, selective in how we've, you know, moved investments and dollars towards, you know, core and where we see the biggest growth and margin opportunity. So that's why they certainly results in those areas in the international theaters haven't been as strong because it's kind of been purposeful for us in terms of where we put our dollars and where we get the best return going forward.
But it will be part of the program for going into
the yeah, just that they, historically it's
yeah, that's right.
A lot of it's the product mix, the later lifecycle products.
Correct.
No, that's great. Thanks for the color. That's it for me.
Thanks, Dave. Okay, have a good day.
This concludes the question and answer session and today's conference call. You may disconnect your lines. Thank you for participating and have a pleasant day.